Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investment alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, why does the term ESG create a problem for so many? Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. Socially responsible investing can mean different things to different people. One form of socially responsible investing that many call ESG has triggered a firestorm of controversy. Why does this particular term cause so much confusion? Are there better ways to represent socially responsible investing that are less controversial? Here with us to talk about that today is Michael Poisson, Managing Director at Ideal Ratings, which provides ethical financial screenings for investors with an insight into companies' ESG practices. Michael is also the author of The ESG Data Revolution, Sustainable Fuel for Tomorrow's Business. Michael's last name, Poisson, by the way, is spelled P-O-I-S-S-O-N. Michael, great to have you with us today.
Great to be here, Patrick. Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us more about your background.
Well, if you want to talk specifically about my background in sustainability and ESG, I came a little late to the game in an official capacity. I've been a fintech entrepreneur for 30 years. I went to an engineering school. My first job was with a software company helping corporate treasurers automate their treasury departments. Then I somehow find myself in hedge fund automation and technology and risk management. And after building and selling three companies, I find myself at a little bit of a crossroads. My mom was dying of cancer. I was given the fortune of being her caretaker because we were in between jobs at that time. And reflecting on my life and past accomplishments and things that were near and dear to her heart, I realized that I really should apply my building knowledge to something a bit more responsible, like my mom always had taught me. So after she passed, I went back to college. I went to Rutgers University and took their first certificate program in corporate social responsibility, which led me to working with a buddy of mine where I still am today at Ideal Ratings, where we do research and data screening on over 40,000 companies globally. In all the things that I've done in my career and my life, this is the thing that's really been I've been most passionate about. So I love what I'm doing today.
And that's great. So as far as ESG goes, we're trying to get to the bottom of why it's become so controversial. Why does the term ESG create so many problems for some people?
Yeah, the problems is kind of a newish thing to me because I've been in this field for about 10 years, and it was an evolution for me, just learning about it. And as I'd go to these conferences, I'd walk away with pure knowledge. But lately, we're seeing a lot of headlines, anti-ESG headlines, and I think it's incredible. On one hand, I think it's great because ESG is getting the attention that it deserves. But on the other hand, to your question, why are people screaming about it and why are the headlines so bold? And I think this is, in my opinion, people feel that their rights are somehow being violated. They're being told to do something against their will. Even though they might want to, you know, have a cleaner world or not litter or be nicer to people, they feel somehow they're being violated by this thing called ESG. And right. What's frustrating to me is when you question them, they probably can't give you a good fundamental definition of what ESG is in the first place.
Well, wouldn't the opposite also be true? I mean, if you aren't able or allowed to adopt an ESG strategy, whether you're a company or an investment firm or an investor, doesn't that mean your rights are also being violated to some degree?
Which is why I love the headlines. And so now people have to stand up. Now it's not people, you know, consider it a movement. It's no longer a movement. We're now moving into a conversation, a debate, an active debate, rather than stick throwing and rock throwing. People are going to be consciously talking about what this thing is and what this thing isn't. So the people that have been pushing the, we'll call it ESG movement forward, are going to have to come up with logical defense of their argument. And, you know, the people that are writing the headlines these days, what I'll call the negative headlines, are going to have to add some clarity as to why they're so anti-ESG. Again, I haven't heard yet a good sound argument as to, you know, what anti-ESG means. And when I challenge people, pro or anti-ESG, to define ESG, it's interesting the definitions that I get back. I've come to reconcile after writing a short book on the topic, you know, my definitions keep changing as well. And I'm kind of resolute in the fact that ESG is nothing but the means of measuring. It's not a thing, actually. Just mm-hmm. like a scale tells you how heavy you are, you know, ESG will give you a context for where you kind of rate on pro-environment, anti-environment, pro-social reform, anti-social reform, or whatever. I'll just say the anti-ESG people are hating the thing that takes your weight. And a lot of people that gain weight do that. But don't yell at the scale. You know, understand what the scale is in the first place. And I think it all does come back to fear. People don't quite understand this ESG thing. So they come up with their own definition and their own fears.
Well, the ESG contingent seems to have created a lot of its own problems and painted itself into a corner. Should it be called something besides ESG? And if not ESG, what are the alternatives?
I struggle with this. I don't have a good answer. I think the ESG movement itself needs some marketing. You know, there are so many participants doing great things in terms of, you know, socially responsible projects and regulations that are coming are helpful. But quite frankly, we need to go back and put some marketing into it to raise awareness, to help people understand what it is and what it isn't. What this thing should be called going forward that is not offensive to anti-ESG people and not offensive to ESG people.
People associate ESG with the environmental aspect, but there are a lot of other segments of ESG.
Sure. I mean, we are tortured by the number of acronyms and names and monikers that are all over this industry. It'd be nice if we could come up with one convenient name that represents what the pro-ESG folks, again, for lack of a better term, are trying to get across. Unfortunately, we don't have a good thing to call it just yet. So it would be helpful if we could all come together with some working name, if you will, or at least spend more time defining it before we start attacking it or promoting it.
It does seem the whole thing has become weaponized in a way, perhaps mainly by the anti-ESG people. But what should pro-ESG people do to counteract that?
Education is one of the most important aspects here. I still believe that we're so far down the road pro-ESG or anti-ESG that we're not spending enough time understanding what it is, or at least helping people understand what it is that we're arguing for or against.
Well, what is your definition? How do you describe ESG?
So I've settled that on ESG is indeed a framework. It's for measuring a company, a country, a municipality, an entity in certain different dimensions. At the end of the day, it's a language that we're using to define so that people can understand these dimensions or aspects as to where this entity stands with respect to an environment, to people, and things like that.
What are some of those other things involved in ESG policy, say, at a company, the suppliers and vendors they use, how they treat their employees, their corporate makeup?
It's ever evolving. The company that I work for, Ideal Ratings, is a research and data company. We started in ethical screening for what I call ethical investors or faith-based investors, people that didn't want guns, alcohol, tobacco in the portfolio, so negative screens. As we went out there and we sold our screening services and research and data, people said, hey, you're not that far away from that ESG thing. So you might as well include some of the positives as well. You know, you are doing good things. You're hiring people. You're paying a fair wage. You're providing benefits. Those are all in the S categories. You are conscious about the environment and polluting less. Well, those are some of the E categories. Your executives, your board acknowledge that there are some social and environmental issues out there, and they're willing to be measured personally, in terms of the company and their compensation for caring about the E and the S, if you will. There's your G. But that list is not finite. What's interesting about that list, if you trace it back, ESG data might have started 40 years ago when interested people, which were investors and countries at the time, were very concerned about South Africa acting in a certain way and treating Black people a certain way. So, you know, the world stood up, took notice, and they started using, when you talk about weaponizing, investment dollars became a weapon. And the first ESG data point might have been, you know, are you doing business in, are you supporting the South African government? Now, since then, we've added all kinds of additional data points. So today, there are over 150 individual research and data companies with their own collection of data and information that they're pulling together. Today, we're in a world where that data is being reevaluated because regulators are finally coming to bear, especially in Europe, with the first set of, you know, required ESG disclosure reports, if you will. Now, what have they done? They've taken these 150 data providers and these thousands of data points, and they've narrowed it down. So now we're going through an exercise of trying to determine what's important and what isn't. And as we get into a more regulatory environment and that spreads globally, I think they'll start shaking out, well, maybe we got it right, maybe we got it wrong. These are the relevant data points for this world of ESG regulation.
Do you think some people who oppose ESG think it's a bad strategy and even wrong because it's not adhering to the fiduciary duty of an investment firm to manage money in the investor's best interests?
I think that's a very kind of ill-informed reaction, if you will. Anybody in the money industry that's worked with institutional investors, large endowments, foundations, pension funds, yes, at the end of the day, the responsibility of the investor is to provide a return and fulfill their obligations to pensioners or retirees or the future endowment. However, there's this concept of risk management where you just can't put all your eggs into one basket. So unfortunately, I get the sense that some anti-ESG folks are just saying, essentially, put it all in the S&P index because stocks are good and that's where the money goes and that's where everybody makes money. Well, that's awful risk management. So diversifying a portfolio, whether that means getting into commodities and fixed income and equities, well, one could consider ESG and responsible investing to be yet another asset class. So that, you know, there should be a slice of the portfolio purely for risk management purposes. We're not telling everybody they only need to invest in green vehicles. What we're saying is that putting an ESG lens on certain investments is a good risk management tool.
Well, there's still going to be those who argue that when it comes to fiduciary responsibility, including ESG as part of the criteria in evaluating investments is a problem, saying it has more to do with social issues than it does with performance.
That's a great question in that, you know, let's throw ESG out the window. Doesn't exist, never did. Responsible investing, let's come back to that. So for many, 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 many years, way before ESG was known as ESG, investors, although they had a fiduciary responsibility to make a return to pay off their, you know, future liabilities, they did invest with certain perspectives and values. They didn't want to invest in, let's say, nuclear weapons. Right. They were making a statement with their investing dollars. And nobody really criticized them for not making their money on nuclear weapons. They made a choice at some point along the way not to invest in tobacco because not only was it, you know, taking lives, but it was actually, a lot of people don't know that, you know, tobacco was a very anti-society targeted to people that couldn't even afford this habit. So there's all kinds of social issues, you know, surrounding tobacco. And people made a conscious decision not to invest in tobacco. It wasn't criticized other than the fact that it's a good return, but we can understand not investing in it today because tobacco is not so good. So when you put this big ESG label on things and say, I am so against this ESG screen, people have to understand that they've been investing with an ESG theme and they've been okay with an ESG theme for a long time.
We often associate energy companies with having an anti-ESG image because of fossil fuels and the harm to the environment, but part of the industry is shifting its strategy, isn't it? Because it sees the future in alternative fuels.
Yeah, I was at a conference in Austin not too long ago. Frankly, I was a little concerned going up and sitting on an ESG panel in the middle of Texas oil country. I didn't know what to expect. The reception. The oil and gas hour session, they used the term ESG more than any other presenter over the course of 2 days. Wow. And what I also found interesting was that there was an acknowledgement, yet the environment is important. And yes, this particular industry has its issues with the environment. But then the counter was, it is one of the most significant investors in alternative energy, whether they think the oil and gas is going to run out someday or not, but we're getting back to risk management again. If for some reason we either run out of fossil fuel or they're regulated out of business, they need another way to stay in business. But there was also an interesting acknowledgement to, you know, ESG is not just one thing. It's not just the environment. There is the S and the G.
Right.
So, you know, the fossil fuel companies, if you will, need to make sure that they are, do they have good hiring practices? Are they paying their folks decently? And don't forget about the G. There was this little company called Enron, who's my primary example of governance.
Right. It's also interesting to me that the anti-ESG forces rarely criticize those energy companies that are gradually exploring alternative energy options.
It's going to take some education.
How can you improve that education?
I think the headlines are great. You know, I've been going to conferences in ESG for almost 10 years. What is it? We're all like-minded people listening politely to the speakers. We have a nice group hug at the end and we go to the next conference.
Right.
So I'm eager to see the sessions where there is an anti-ESG person defending a position that says, this is why ESG is bad. This is why you shouldn't invest with an ESG lens.
So many of these discussions are too polite?
Yes, absolutely. Just like they say, building a green car is a very dirty business. So we could spend hours talking about, you know, Tesla and how good of an ESG company they are or aren't. Depends on the measure. So in many ways, ESG and Tesla, it's one of the worst companies in the world. And many ways, ESG and Tesla, it's one of the best companies in the world. It's just your perspective. And most people that I'll call anti-ESG won't understand what we just said there.
We're talking with Michael Poisson, Managing Director at Ideal Ratings, which provides ethical financial screenings for investors. He's also the author of The ESG Data Revolution, Sustainable Fuel for Tomorrow's Business. Michael, tell us more about your book and your target audience.
Yeah, it's a very short, simple book just about my observation in the industry. I try to focus primarily on the business of ESG. There's tons of knowledge out there in terms of what is ESG, what is ESG data, what does it all mean? But my observations have been more about all the businesses that are sprouting up as a result of it. Huh. So as I mentioned, there's over 150 data vendors out there specifically in the ESG space. Some specialize in, you know, diversity, some specialize in carbon, but what do they do with this data? They put together financial products in some cases and indexes. So we've got a whole bunch of index companies out there. And there's all the software companies that are popping up for portfolio managers to better assess their portfolios and report back to their investors, you know, how compliant or non-compliant they are. Then that's also bringing on, as we invest more in this space and there are more regulations out, there's assurance companies coming to market, insurance companies coming to market. So the growth in industry is phenomenal. You can't go to, I don't think you can go to any even community college in America without seeing a course in sustainability or something of the like. And the graduate programs are just continue to multiply. So it's a huge business, growing business. And then we get to the question of, well, is that all a good thing? You know, do these, you know, socially responsible people, you know, making a profit out of this whole ESG thing? Well, I've gotten over that already. The more money you make, the more you can give back. I'm not going to apologize that my book isn't printed on recycled paper because I don't have any control over that. That's why I'm saying I'm an ESG moderate now. I am aware that's a big issue. It's something that needs a lot of conversation to move the conversation forward.
So that creates a ton of new job and career opportunities.
Yeah, there's one section of the book that just talks about all the different jobs and job titles. And, you know, one of the major consulting firms announced that they were going to be adding something like 100,000 new jobs specifically in the ESG / sustainability space over the course of the next couple of years.
And of course, that doesn't even touch on all the opportunities in research and development, solar and wind power, installation, construction, maintenance, the electric vehicle industry, technology, and so many other areas.
So yes, you know, I would encourage any kid, you know, starting out today, at least put ESG as a minor or sustainability as a minor, because it's going to be in every conversation, everybody's job in some capacity going forward. Well, we can always add in that, you know, these new jobs, without the ESG movement, there wouldn't be ESG podcasts now, would there?
Good point.
In an industry all by itself.
Getting back to the sort of boogeyman image in some circles regarding ESG, is that type of fear-mongering sustainable? Can they keep that up?
Well, maybe we should just take the opposite course and become, you know, embrace the fear, you know, make it a bigger boogeyman and, you know, show everyone what the world is going to be like if the anti-ESG movement, as we call it, prevails. That's a thought. We've operated in a certain way for so many years, decades now, where polite people have a conversation about something they all agree upon. Mm-hmm. But again, as more people come to the party, you know, we're going to have to find better ways of explaining the situation and convincing them otherwise.
Looking down the road, where do you see the future for ESG, say 10 years from now? Or do you see any trends?
Yeah, I always liked going to the conferences years ago where every conference would end with the same closing question. What is this conference going to look like in 10 years' time?
Yeah.
And it was always the same answer. Well, we'll never have another ESG conference ever again because it'll be so embedded in our life and our lifestyles and our business that it won't be its own thing. Well, I think we're very far away from that. But that said, you're looking for trends. One trend that I'll identify right off the bat is we are about to get an influx of reluctant participants because regulations are here. They're not going away. All of a sudden, you've got all these minds that could care less about ESG, about sustainability, that are going to be required to fill out a transparency report, file some document with a government agency, and they didn't want to do it. They still don't want to do it, but now they're going to have to do it. Where we've just added a million new brains to the conversation.
Right.
And they're going to start challenging the data. They're going to start challenging the intent of the regulation. They're going to start bringing more thoughts to the table. These reluctant participants, I think, are going to add a lot of value. And we might find that the important ESG data that we thought was so dear up to this point might be a new set of data in 5 years' time. And I think we're going to be thinking about ESG a little bit differently. But to get there, we need to settle on some common language and an understanding of what it is and what it isn't.
Michael, thank you so much for your thoughts and your time today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time and the attention and look forward to our next conversation.
Yes, I do too, Michael. We've been talking with Michael Poisson, Managing Director at Ideal Ratings, which provides ethical financial screening for investors with an insight into companies' ESG practices. Their website is idealratings.com. Michael is also the author of The ESG Data Revolution, Sustainable Fuel for Tomorrow's Business. You can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.